Lesson number 5. Christ in the Law. What is the law? What is any law? Law is a description of relationships. The laws of chemistry show the relationship of molecules, atoms. The laws of mathematics, the laws of astronomy, show relationships of numbers, particles, macro bodies. The law of God shows relationships. So law is a description of a relationship that already exists. When we study chemistry, we look into states that already exist. When we look into the stellar spheres, we look at relationships that already exist. Sun, moon, stars, celestial bodies, all related to each other by forces that control, that appeal, that repel. When God gives moral laws, they show all the relationships that are possible. Part number one, God's law before sin. Now in this context, we're thinking of the Ten Commandments. Divided into two parts, relationships to God and God's relationships to us, and our relationships to our fellow men. And the Ten Commandments describe every relationship possible to man, vertically and horizontally. By the law is a revelation of sin. Sin is a distortion of a relationship, a breaking of a relationship. There are no ways to recognize sin without law in our present state of ignorance. We need a law to reveal to us where we deviate. By the law is the knowledge of sin. Satan sinned, therefore the law existed. As patriarchs and prophets points out, it came to the angels as a surprise that there was such a thing as law. They had been living the perfect life. That was the thing to do. That was the only thing to do. But when Satan suggested there was an alternative, they suddenly discovered there was law. So since Satan sinned, law existed before he sinned. Sin is lawlessness. And since God is love, and his love made perfect relationships, the breaking of those relationships is sin. So God is love. His love is defined by law, is seen in perfect relationships. Lawfulness and love are what God is. God's character is displayed by the relationships he has set up. Genesis 1, all the orderliness, the dependingness of every part to every other part. Day 2, leaned heavily on day 1. Day 3, required what day 1 and 2 had done. Day 4, 5, and 6, 7, all needed what had gone before. You needed 6 working days before you came to the 7th Sabbath day. So, where there is no law, there is no transgression. Satan sinned, therefore the law existed. Adam and Eve were created subject to the law. They were made so that every relationship within themselves, toward each other, toward the environment, toward God, towards stellar spaces, was all very good. Part number 2. The law existed at creation. So when Eve and then Adam sinned, they broke the law and death passed upon all flesh. So the law existed. When Cain got angry, He broke the commandment, thou shalt not kill. At the end of chapter 4, we read of Lamech, who wanted more than one wife, and I'm only guessing now, but I think in God's ideal, there weren't an overabundance of males to females, among cows, among sheep, among doves, among human beings, so that siblings mated with their siblings. So Lamech wanted more than one wife, so he had to kill somebody. Read the little poem he made there. A love poem that ends in the murder of his rival, so to speak. Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not commit adultery, right there in Genesis 4. So the law existed. And when we come to the days of the flood, and then later on, up to the days of Noah, we see that men were breaking every law in the Decalogue. But some few in every generation from Adam resisted Satan's efforts. Every artifice, every temptation, and stood forth as noble representatives of what the power of God could do through man. Christ working with human effort, helping man overcoming the power of Satan. Climaxed by Enoch, who lived in that evil generation, so close to God, his walk was so near his Savior that God took him. They were representatives in an age of rebellion who manifested by grace and faith and trust that it was possible for sinful, fallen man to keep God's law. And then when sin covered the earth, God obliterated the population and saved few, that is, 8 souls who continued to believe in him. This law was manifest after the flood, all the way down to Sinai. And we see it in the lives of Abraham, Sarah, Hagar, Ishmael, Edom, Jacob, right down to his progeny, was carried away to Egypt. All sinned, all broke the law, some accepted Christ, some were forgiven. So this whole controversy of law, sin, obedience, death kept on till God brought, as part 3 says, his people who had been now caught up in slavery to go back to the promised land and represent him before men. During their time in slavery, when laws were made so that they would have to break the Sabbath, and Moses came along and told Pharaoh, these people have got to keep the Sabbath. He says, why are you making them rest on this day? You got to do more work. You got to go spend that day gathering straw to mix with the bricks. Do your work. And they had, to a great extent, forgotten what it meant to be righteous. And so the Lord brought them wonderfully, miraculously, from the hand of Pharaoh, through the plagues, across the Red Sea, across the wilderness, where he had supplied them with his food and his drink miraculously every day. Special message for manna on Friday, double portion, Sabbath, it didn't go bad. He brought them to Sinai. There he gave them the law. The Father and the Son and the Spirit came down to Mount Sinai. The Father and the Son stood side by side on Sinai and proclaimed the law. The Spirit wrote the law, not on fleshly tables, but this time on tables of stone, as a promise, as an allegory, as a metaphor, that he was ready to write them on their hearts. These he wrote on stone, perishable almost, as far as wilderness dwellers were concerned. And then Moses was commanded to place them, when the sanctuary was built, in the ark as a foundation to the mercy seat, the throne of God, there showing the basis of the government of God is law. Part number 4, the teaching of the Ten Commandments. As I mentioned, the first 4 describe relationships between God and man. No other gods, no props to worship, pictures, idols, anything like that. We don't take the name of God in vain. We don't call ourselves Christians and then take the name of Christ in vain by the way we live or by the way we talk. So we look to God, worship God, revere God, love God, do what He wants to, first 4 commandments. The second table consists of relationships to men, to our parents, to life, to procreation, to possession, to communication, and then in our minds. Our horizontal relationships are all described by the second table. Our vertical relationships are described by the first 4. Part number 5 stresses that there is not a commandment of the law that is not for the good and happiness of man, both in this life and in the life to come. In obedience to God's law, man is surrounded with a hedge to keep him from evil. He who breaks down this divinely directed barrier at one point has destroyed its power to protect him, for he has opened a way by which the enemy can enter to waste and ruin. Every commandment is a promise. Let's look at the commandment, thou shalt not kill. What is God saying? I have given life. You had nothing to do with providing it. I gave life. Don't mess around with it. Don't do anything that will destroy the quality of that life. By any way, by the things you eat, whether you exercise or not, how dangerously you live, whether you follow the yellow line or the white line or the dotted line, don't spoil life. I've given property. Everyone has got his space. Everyone has things that are his. Don't take them away. Everyone communicates. Make the communication yea, yea, nay, nay. Don't falsify it. Don't fabricate. And so as we think of these commandments, I've just given 3 illustrations, God is promising us that if we will not interfere with the reality that He created, that are described by law, we'll have life, and have that life more abundantly. Part number 5, Christ and the law. Christ spoke the law, Hebrews 12, Father and the Son both spoke it, we are told. Adventist commentary on Exodus 20. Christ fulfilled the law. If you fulfill a contract, you carry it out. Christ came to keep the law, not to destroy it. He says, not one jot or one tittle, the smallest letter or part of a letter in the commandments will be changed. I didn't come to abolish it. I came to carry it out, to exemplify it. Now, some folks say there is no law. The law was done away with. If there's no law, there's no sin. So Christ died in vain if there's no law. Christ's death guarantees, establishes the fact that there is sin that required death. So as you look to the cross of Calvary, and you look to the Christ, to the life of Christ, and his death thereon, one must admit that there is sin, and therefore law. Part number 6. The law is never presented, either in the Old or in the New Testament, as a means of salvation. The law is a revealer of sin that requires salvation. And these thoughts are embedded in Revelation 12:17, where the remnant church is said to keep the commandments of God. Not in their own strength, but by the grace of God. Not through their own thinking, but by the Spirit of God, through the imputed and imparted righteousness of Christ, which by faith they accept, and which by faith they replicate in their daily lives.